Hello and welcome to the Majlis, Central Asia podcast at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. I'm Mohammed Tahir, director of the Turkmen service at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. In Central Asia, another referendum is underway, this time in Tajikistan. As in every referendum in the region, the outcome is more or less predictable, which is further consolidation of power by the president. Turkmenistan was the first to take this route in the region, followed by Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, but lately the Tajik president is neck and neck with his Turkmen counterparts in implementing some of the bizarre authoritarian practices. President Rahman, already in power since last 20 years, if approved, the upcoming referendum will set the path for Rahman to stay in power as long as he wants. Today, we are discussing the ramification of the likely outcome of the referendum for Tajikistan in the region and, more importantly, to the Rahman and his extended family members. To discuss the subject, I have Dr. Helene Tebow, postdoctoral researcher at the Center for International Studies at the University of Montreal, who is author of the number of academic works on Tajikistan. Once again, welcome to the Majlis, Dr. Tebow.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Very nice to have you. Tahir Safarov, a Tajik journalist at our Tajik service here at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, is joining us first time. Tahir, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And Bruce Spanier, editor of Kishlak Oazi, a blog focusing on Central Asia, is joining us today here in the studio. Bruce, as always, welcome to the show, Majlis.
Always a pleasure to be here.
Thank you, Bruce. Tahir, let's start with you. Please take us through what are the biggest changes that this referendum includes.
Okay, there is more than 40 amendments in to the constitution that will be put in referendum in May 22, but there is three or four the main amendments. The first, which is give the Rahman
lifetime
presidency, and the second, which is make the nominee to presidency if he was 30 years old, he or she could not like be president in Tajikistan. But now if he is 30, which is Rahman will be 30 in 2 or 3 years, he can be president in Tajikistan. And the third amendment, it's about political parties. So if these amendments will be approved, so Tajikistan will ban setting up
religious parties.
And the fourth one, which make us take children to take care of their parents, written in constitution. They have to do that. Even though in Tajikistan it's a tradition to take care of your parents, but they will include it in constitution too.
Bruce, what's the game plan here?
I think the first two, the first three things that Tahir mentioned are probably the most important things here. Rahman is coming up on the end of his term in 2020, and as the constitution states now, that should be it for him. He did 2 5-year terms. He did 3 7-year terms, 1 5-year term and 3 7-year terms. But the second time he was elected for a 5-year term, they simply extended it and said the first two didn't count. And so he was elected under the new constitution, the way they amended it in 1999. He was elected in 2006. He was elected in 2013. And that means he should be done because there's a 2-term limit when his term expires in 2020. So now that's not going to be an issue at all. And he has the option, of course, of them having lowered the eligibility age to be elected president from 35 to 30. So his son, Rustam Emomali, I believe, will be 30 next year.
Yes, he's head of anti-corruption agency.
Right. He's been groomed, to take over the position. And I mean, there's even some talk that possibly it would be Azada, Rahman's daughter, who could be seeking the presidency. But the big thing for the people of Tajikistan and certainly for Rahman is that there probably won't be much confusion about who's going to get elected in 2020. And, we can't expect any change to come, probably for years and years now in the way that the country is run, which some people might consider a blessing and other people will probably be disappointed that it is that way. But, there's no question now of the issue of leadership in Tajikistan after this referendum.
Mm. Okay. The referendum is scheduled for 22nd of May.
Yes,
Tahir, you want to say something?
As Bruce mentioned, so his son, like groomed to be president in future. But the amendments was just a surprise for everyone because President Rahmon, he's still have a huge support among population, even though but frustration is growing. And there is some rumors that he wants to give the power to his son or to Ozada, but we don't know because he's announced as a leader of nation.
Oh, yeah.
So even his son would be president, but he should listen to his father because it's written in that law that leader of nation says something, he should do it. He must do it.
So this is part of this referendum? Already there?
It's a law already there. Before the they announced the referendum, they approved a law which called Rahmon the leader of the nation. So the leader of the nation will be even higher than the
like
president.
The supreme leader of Iran kind of situation?
But
right?
Not religious.
Yeah, okay. Dr. Thibault, so what's your take? What's at stake here?
Well, what I think is that these amendments or the changing of the constitution represent is really it's also part of a trend in the region, as we can see. Yeah. In Kazakhstan, the president Nursultan Nazarbayev also received such a title of a leader of the nation, eternal leader of the nation, something like this. In 2010, we see in Tajikistan a consolidation of authoritarianism, and most importantly, and we've been discussing family issues of Rahmon. So, and more importantly, nepotism. So I think this is a regional trend as well. In Turkmenistan, this is a different story. The Turkmenbashi, leader of the founder of the Turkmen nation, for instance, received such a title, but he died in 2005. I'm not sure what's the status of the Turkmen current Turkmen president.
Oh, protector.
I'm sorry, protector?
The protector
of the nation.
Yeah, so this is a trend that it's part of what I see as a consolidation of authoritarianism in Central Asia. And Uzbekistan is also marked by nepotism, although I don't think Karimov has a special title. So this is my interpretation of the changes that are coming.
Right, Tahir, you obviously mentioned several articles. What people know about this? How do they understand this and these changes that are coming?
Even there is a lot of reports, and every day you can see the report in Tajik TV about these amendments, and they are calling people to vote in the referendum. And there are a lot of demonstration which is organized by local officials.
Supporting the
yes. Yeah.
President or
yeah.
the change.
Supporting the president. And recently our correspondent was in Sogd region, and there were about 10,000 young people gathering it and supporting the constitution amendments. And he asked one of them, so why are you here? And he said, we support the referendum, we are going to vote. And he asked him, do you know what amendments are there? He said, no, I don't know. He turned to ask his teacher, and he said, I don't know anything about the amendments. So this is this show what people do know about the amendments.
Obviously, maybe I'm trying to compare here apple with the oranges. Before any such big development, there has to be a discussion, difference of opinion, exchange of ideas. Any such thing is happening there?
I have a lot of reports, but all of them in official papers, official newspapers, and there were some reports about the referendum, and private news agencies, private newspapers write about it, but not extensively because they are afraid of writing critical report because that in recent year the media environment in Tajikistan was very bad, and let's say they have been suffocating the independent media, so you cannot see a lot of reports about the referendum in private or independent media in Tajikistan.
Bruce, we're not expecting any surprise in terms of outcome from the Rahmon's point of view.
I think this was a done deal the minute they announced it. Tajikistan is to some extent kind of an exception in Central Asia because it still has that specter of the civil war hanging over it. And the people that are old enough to remember the civil war don't want to see anything like that happen again. So they've always been, since the civil war ended in 1997, generally among the Tajik population, people are willing to go along with anything that preserves the status quo because they don't want to see a change that brings them back to the event of 20 years ago again. And that's where Rahman's got a lot of his popularity. I mean, he even has the title now of the originator of peace or architect of peace or something. You know, and that's something that people have always had to sit there and pay attention to while they voted in elections, even if they were not particularly happy, say, supporters of the Islamic Renaissance Party of Tajikistan or something like that. They weren't going to voice too much opposition because nobody wanted the country to go back to where it was 20 years ago. So this referendum, when it came up, is, you know, we've gotten into this habit of like, that's what's suggested, that's the way it's going to be, and people don't tend to oppose it very much out there because, you know, again, the mindset is we don't want a drastic change that brings us back to the past, so let's preserve what we got here and keep this going. Even if it's not the most ideal system, and even if we don't like some of it, it's better than civil war again. So.
Mm-hmm. Before going to break, Dr. Thibault, you touched on this subject just earlier. Rahman already has all power that he needs, right? He's the nation of the leader. He has everything. His family members are everywhere. So why he felt need for going through such a referendum?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. It's hard to tell. I would say again that it's a consolidation of rule at a moment where there's an economic crisis, not necessarily a crisis in Tajikistan, but economic development is really slow. And the opposition have been sidelined, mainly the Islamic Revival Party of Tajikistan that has been banned in 2015. And I think this is really an affirmation of the power of the president and his family. So, or it could be also a sort of extravagant way to affirm authority in the sense that it is to develop this cult of personality that we have seen in other countries. Although it is, I wouldn't say it is very strong in Tajikistan, the cult of personality, it is there, but it's not as extravagant as it was, and it still is in Turkmenistan, for instance. But basically, I think this is an affirmation of authoritarian rule in a moment of dire economic development, and also, as Bruce mentioned, a reaffirmation of stability. I read in the Tajik newspapers that this was really presented, the referendum was presented as a way to ensure stability in the country for the years to come.
Yeah, and you see a lot of reports in official newspapers that it's one more step to the democracy forward. So, yeah, and they say that even you see that it's okay to change constitution every time because, for example, his assistant said in official newspaper that France changed his constitution 6 times,
okay.
Germany 50 times, and even United States 27 times. There was 27 amendment which like related to the constitution. So if he said that if a country goes forward and the situation changed, so the constitution could be changed too, and that was the
official interpretation of what they are
why they
to
need
do.
To change their constitution.
Interesting point. Okay, thank you, Tahir. Let's take a short break here. When we come back, we will discuss ramification of this move going forward to Tajikistan in the region. Welcome back to the Majlis, the Central Asia podcast at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. Today we are discussing the upcoming referendum in Tajikistan and its possible ramifications to the country in the region. Discussing the subject with me is Dr. Helene Thibault, a postdoctoral researcher at the Center for International Studies at the University of Montreal. Helene is author of a number of academic works on Tajikistan. I don't know if I am allowed to reveal this, Dr. Thibault. Soon you are moving permanently to Central Asia.
Yes.
Congratulations in advance. My fellow journalist from Tajikistan, Tohir Safarov, is joining us today. Tohir is the broadcaster at our Tajik service. And well-known personality, Bruce Panier, in Central Asia, the editor of Kishlag Awazi, a blog focusing on Central Asia, is with me today. I'm Mohammed Tahir, director of the Turkmen Service at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. So, picking up the subject where we left, in a number of occasions, we have compared, Bruce, the recent developments in Tajikistan with those of what has happened in Turkmenistan in the 90s. I think the referendum only brings Tajikistan one step closer to where Turkmenistan is today.
I agree with that, absolutely. I mean, this cements Rahman's hold on power, not quite to the extent that the only referendum that they had in Turkmenistan was merely to keep Niyazov in power. That was in 2004, and they just said instead of holding elections, we'll just bypass the next scheduled election and keep him in until 2000. But by then, they had already named him leader for life, and there was no need to even hold the election at all. Rahman, I haven't seen that Rahman wants to dispense with elections entirely. His biggest problem was the term limit. And so that now that is gone, and he does not have to worry about that anymore. But certainly if you're a critic of the system, or if you would like to see some kind of improvement or change in the system, this has to be a little disheartening to you, because what it means is that nothing is really going to change in Tajikistan, just as nothing changed in Turkmenistan, and nothing is changing now, really, in Turkmenistan, because everyone knows these guys are just going to stay there forever. And unless they come up with the idea themselves, there's no other way to force change upon them. They sit, they rule supreme.
Tahir, there was a referendum, I think several referendums in Tajikistan in the past, I believe.
Yes.
So in terms of the organization, in terms of the messaging, what is different between this and the previous ones?
The previous ones, like, I haven't seen this kind of propaganda in official media, and now it is very, like, extended, and you can see it everywhere. But before, in the two referendum, which was in the past, the media was, like, very passive. And there was there weren't a lot of newspapers or state broadcasters which could pass their whole information to everyone in the remote village. But now every person can hear about the constitution, about even though the explanation of amendments are, like, very hard, and you cannot understand it very easy. So, but people know that there would be a referendum.
Yeah.
So local officials will force everyone to go and vote, and they even can show you which box you have to tick.
Yeah, in this case, we are not in any kind of illusion, Dr. Thibault, that what's going to come out from this election, right? Not election, referendum, sorry.
Mm-hmm. Oh yes, I have no doubt that it will be a positive outcome in terms of approving the new constitutional amendments. I think this is also something that we should also stress, that it's not so much connected to the referendum itself, but the law that Tahir mentioned earlier on. The law on founder of peace and national unity, leader of the nation, because it gives Rahman the right to oversee the activities of the government even after he retires, and also gives him lifelong immunity from judicial and criminal prosecutions for him and his family. So this is also quite a significant and worrisome change.
It's a full package
to Tajik politics.
Yeah, I'm saying it's a full package.
But in terms of, like, politics, as Bruce mentioned, the outcome would be same, and so there is no crisis. So migrants are coming back to Tajikistan. Their life is harder than before. And the one thing that people want, they say that let him be, but, like, don't bother us. We would like to leave. And because there is a lot of corruption, if you go to somewhere, if you want to set up a business, so it's hard to get any permission. Everyone will ask you to pay something, you have to bribe. So people are like frustrated. They don't want any like change. As Bruce mentioned, they have bad memory from war times. So even I have it. So, and everyone say that we want peace, but let us work. Don't bother us. Yeah, just be there, but let us live as we want and don't bother us. Mm.
If I could just jump in there, you know, there's another part to that too that I didn't mention about why it would be unlikely that anyone would even oppose this. Is not only doesn't anyone go back to the civil war, but generally across Central Asia, there's that philosophy that to keep the officials in that are in now because their pockets are already full, and if you make a change, then you bring a bunch of people to power that have empty pockets, and it means you're going to be even poorer than.
So you will go back, so, and then it will be harder.
Leave the guy that's already stolen money in, so we don't have someone new here to steal money.
That's scary.
And if I can just add something about political parties, because so the idea to ban religious parties in Tajikistan, to forbid the creation of parties based on religion, this is something significant because Tajikistan was the only country that did not have this in its constitution so far because of the presence of the Islamic Revival Party of Tajikistan. And the party was banned in 2015, but this is really the end of religious politics in Tajikistan.
Mm. And it is in, it says that there's political parties should not be religious or ideology. There shouldn't be any ideology, and that kind of political parties could get the support from the outside, which is banned. And also it say that even foreign citizens cannot help support, should not support any political parties which exist in Tajikistan.
Bruce, yes, this changes, which we have no doubt is going to be approved. If this becomes into effect, what is next?
Well, no, this is interesting because, as Elaine has alluded to, there are economic problems in Tajikistan. Yeah. And I don't have to tell you that. It's all across Central Asia. I don't have to tell you guys that either. So you kind of, like I said, you're stuck with the system. If you're going to go with this, then you got to face the facts that you're stuck with the system. This government has shown, and it's not just this government in Central Asia, but generally all of them, that they're absolutely bankrupt for ideas about how to deal with the current economic problems that they got. They don't have any answers for what's happening. In fact, in some cases, I'm not sure they really understand why they have all these economic problems entirely. So you're locked into that. Now, how far can the standard of living plummet before people start to go, you know, that I've had enough? If you had a system that was more flexible and offered the potential for somebody to get new, to get elected, someone who had some, or someone with new ideas to even be allowed to speak about them, then that would give you some hope that maybe things were going to change. But if things keep spiraling downward like they have been, people are going to be faced with the choice of I can't change. There's only one way to change the system and my personal future, and that is go back to 1992 to 1997 and try to get rid of this government, because he's going to be locked in, or if not Rahman himself, then probably a member of his family. So we're going to see zero change in the government, zero new ideas or creativity coming in, and we're, you know, at that point everyone just kind of hopes that things get better, but they really have no basis to believe that it will get better. I mean, this change would have, the better economic conditions would have to be a result of an improvement in the global economy the way it stands now, because Tajikistan just doesn't hold any cards it can play to improve its economic future, at least with the people we have in government right now. So that is a concern, looking maybe not even that far into the future, that, you know, Rahman on one hand, he represents stability, but that on the other hand, that means the inability to change.
Yeah, the realities are such, as Tahir, you mentioned, the immigrants are coming back, unemployment is high and it's increasing. And also what's increasing in Tajikistan lately is that crackdown against civil society, media, as you mentioned. Now, after this referendum, Rahman having more power, and that is constitutionalized power. Do you see this crackdown increasing going forward?
I talked to some editors in, like, who has newspapers and also private newspapers, private media. So they say that they believe that after this, the crackdown will be harder. Even I do not, I hope it will not be. But so they say that they are going to suffocate also the media, which is still exist. There are some newspapers in Tajik in Russian language that they say they write about political life in Tajikistan, and sometimes criticize government, not the president, but like let's say ministries and other. But they say that even it would be harder after the referendum. And also, I've read recently a post in Facebook from one tragic guy who was like intellectual. He said that I'm sorry that I want to leave this country, which I love. So there is desperation among intellectuals who wants to leave the country, and young people are also very frustrated because there are lack of the job. So, and it makes them very easy prey for radical group, which is in Tajikistan. They are existing, and even the Tajik government say that. The young people are the most easy prey for this kind of radical groups.
That's an interesting point you raised, Bruce, like more authoritarianism, more crackdown, combined with more economic hardships, frustration. Do you think that's a window we are looking at going forward, like kind of more kind of civil unrest kind of stuff?
Yeah, I mean, certainly. I don't see any other way around it. Rahman's not going to get any younger. He's not going to be more flexible in his thinking in the future. If anything, he's just going to be more hardened and convinced that what he's been doing all along is the right thing to do. So I would imagine we're going to just continue to see firming of the policy, consolidation around the first family to make sure that they're going to stay in, and that when Rahman does decide to leave, someone from his family will undoubtedly succeed him. I thought it was interesting what Tahir said about, you know, that these people, in some ways, this is opening up certain segments of the society, particularly the youth, to fall under the influence of some of these Islamic groups. Because while you hear this a lot in other countries in Central Asia, it's always important to remember that Tajikistan actually does border a country with a lot of extremists. It's one thing when they talk about it in Kazakhstan and about Kazakhs going to Syria or Iraq or something like that, but Tajikistan is neighboring Afghanistan, and so the influences that all these countries are afraid of actually exist just kilometers away from the people in Tajikistan.
Dr. Thibault, you have huge expertise on religion in Tajikistan. Do you see, as a result of this crackdown, as a result of more authoritarianism in the country, it is paving way for some of the extremist religious groups sneaking into the society again?
I think overall Tajikistan or Tajik people are sort of immune to radicalism. Not immune, but in the sense that radical ideas are not very popular in the overall population in Tajikistan. We also mentioned earlier that actually Rahman, despite his authoritarian ways, still has a lot of support. I think radical ideas are not will not find fertile ground so much in Tajikistan. But of course, there is frustration. But at the same time, I think, unfortunately, the administration today has been able to crush opposition. They really crushed the Islamic Revival Party. Most of its most active members are now in exile. There are the militants that stayed. The party members that stayed behind. I think. Yes, unfortunately, the administration has been successful, and it also crushed other regional oppositions, regional groups that were active, not particularly challenging to the government, but still there, putting pressure on the government. I mean, Gorno Badakhshan 2012-2014, and also in the Kamarov Valley, Rasht Valley, more recently. So I think the prospect of an uprising is unlikely, we never know.
Right. It was great talking to you, Dr. Helen Thibault, a postdoctoral researcher at the Center for International Studies at the University of Montreal. Tahir Safarov, Tajik journalist from our Tajik service, and Bruce Panier, the editor of Kishlak Awazi, a blog focusing on Central Asia. Thank you very much for being part of the Majlis today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's it from me, Mohammed Tahir, Director of the Turkmen Service at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. Bye-bye.